Joined now by Clark Fossler of Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. We had Clark on many times before to talk Royals baseball, and Clark is with us today on this Wednesday. Clark, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'd do better if the Royals were doing better, but they have shown some signs of turning some things around. Now that we're almost to the quarterway point of the Royals season, how would you grade out this team, and where do you think it's going?
Well, I would obviously grade them pretty low, but they have shown some signs of getting back to the kind of team that you'd like to think they could be. I'm still trying to be optimistic, so I'm still hoping for some contention yet this year as far as getting into the playoffs, but they have a little bit of work to do.
Well, let's talk about the team. Certainly early in the year, the first few games, the bullpen was really bad. The hitting was bad, and then the hitting's been really bad for most of this quarter of the season. The bullpen came around. The starting pitching has been pretty consistent. A few starts here and there that haven't been good, but nobody's perfect. But let's start with the offense. And, you know, for me, I call it $84 million of futility. And I put Moss and Gordon together on that. Of course, $72 million of the $84 million is Alex Gordon. Let's start with Gordon, because to me, he's not a guy that's going to carry a team. He has not been a guy that he wasn't even great when the Royals won the World Series. He had the one big hit, but if you look at the rest of the World Series, he didn't hit worth a lick. He didn't have a great year that year. And I thought at the time that when they signed Alex Gordon to 4 years, $72 million, it was a huge mistake. And right now, that's proven to be true unless he can figure something out. He did get two hits last night, although one was an infield hit. His average is up to a whopping 164. Last year he was bad. Over the last 800 plate appearances, he's been really bad. Alex Gordon, is this when things turned on the Royals, when Alex Gordon was signed to Kansas City? Because it seems like that's affected some of the signings down the line, and then the Royals get a little tight with the payroll in regards to, hey, you know what, we got to shed payroll. Davis, we're going to ship off to Chicago for Soler. Greg Holland, we don't really want to spend the money the Rockies are offering there, even though he's coming off of Tommy John surgery. How much did the Gordon contract affect what the Royals did moving forward right after they won the World Series?
Well, I think it's certainly played into how they manage their money going forward. I think probably what they saw with Gordon is two things. One, he's probably, why Hosmer is maybe the face of the team. Gordon's the guy that people are used to. I think losing Gordon would have been a really bad PR move for the team. And, that plays into it. And he also is one of those guys that they thought they could re-sign. And I think really realistically they are very skeptical of their ability to sign a Hosmer, to sign Kane or Moustakas past this year. And so they said, let's lock him in. Here's a guy that works hard. We know he's going to be in physical condition. Now, what's happened and what concerns me about Gordon is you watch him play and you delve into the numbers about pitches he's swinging at. Nothing's really changed other than he's not getting the ball in play. And so there you worry about, has the bat slowed down to the point where he just is not going to hit anymore? And if that's the case, then it's a horrible contract. Now, we have also seen Gordon go on tears where he has just been flailing like he has now, and then for two or three weeks, everything he hits gets in play, and he hits the ball hard. And so I'm not prepared to say he's done, but the real concern is, and I've heard this from, read from what opposing scouts are saying, they don't see anything different. So it's not like his swing is suddenly mucked up or he's hurt. Before we could always blame it on the wrist or the other injuries. The concern is that this is who he is now, and he's fallen off the cliff. Now, I'll say is when they signed this contract, I didn't think he was a guy that would fall off the cliff, like Billy Butler did, for example, because he keeps himself in shape, because he works so hard. So the hope is that somehow he gets through this and adjusts to what's going on, and maybe he becomes a guess hitter, and so we give up some of that on-base percentage that Gordon has always been good at. Even he's had some horrible batting averages and still gotten on base at a 330, 340, 350 clip. Maybe now he becomes a guy that's going to, hit more home runs and not be an on-base guy. Something's going to have to change because you can't go along hitting like he is right now.
Well, and he has no home runs right now, and that's also alarming. He doesn't have any power. You mentioned the wrist injury, and I think you could go back, and I don't know exact numbers since he had that wrist injury, but I remember After he had that wrist injury and he was coming back, we had Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, on, and he said, you know, this is, if you have a knee injury, you have a foot injury, you have a shoulder injury, yeah, that can affect you, and it takes some time to get it back as a hitter. But when you're dealing with the hands and the wrist, you now, that can be an injury that takes longer to come back from. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Alex Gordon, but one, I know swinging a bat, and we coach some younger kids too, that if you have a sore wrist, you lose your power. You simply lose your power. And Alex Gordon has no power. And I'm wondering if Alex Gordon has something wrong with him that some people aren't aware of, and he's too prideful, and he wants to not use that as an excuse, because as you mentioned, he works so hard. And I've heard from many people close to the organization and read as well, like you did, that he wants to live up to that contract. Maybe he tries too hard in some situations, but right now, this isn't just a 3-week slump. This is a 1-year slump.
Oh, it is. And, you know, he wasn't good last year. And I think really you could go back to the wrist on that. And you're right. If you have a wrist or a hand injury, it can really affect a hitter well past the point of time where you think it's done affecting him, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's just mentally.
Yeah.
If it hurts to swing the bat, if it hurts to turn on an inside fastball, your mind's going to say, this is going to hurt before you do it, and I don't care how mentally tough you are, you have to beat your way through that. And that could very well be what's going on. That's got to be the hope. I'm going to show my age here, but way back when, Andres Galarraga, I believe, was drafted in the expansion draft by the Colorado Rockies, and he was basically out of baseball, and he had a wrist injury, and this is a long time ago, and then came back and was a really good hitter for a period of time for them. And so, and I remember him saying, well, I finally am healthy. I can hit the ball and it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully maybe that's what's going on here. I mean, the Royals need Gordon to be competent. I mean, like you said, he's not going to be an MVP candidate. But if he could get back to being the guy that hits 270 with a 350 on base percentage, playing defense in the field, which has not been affected, obviously, and get some home runs, get some doubles, you know, have a little pop, boy, that makes the bottom of the lineup look a whole lot better if he can just get back to competency.
I agree with that. And the other thing that we've been hearing, and I don't know if this is just purely speculation, but that's not true. I heard this. Jason Stark was talking about it, that one of the things about Gordon, they don't think he's done, but what Jason Stark has heard from various scouts is that Gordon's not making any adjustments. And so the question for you is, is that on Gordon, or is that on the hitting coach and the Royals organization, to where you got to say, listen, we're paying you $72 million. You might not want to adjust, but you need to adjust. And you would think Gordon would be open to adjusting since he's been so bad for over a year. And so I hear a lot of people going, well, Dale Swaim, he's the scapegoat. The Royals don't turn around offensively. That's the guy you got to can. You got to fire him, and the problem is with the approach. And, you know, if you can be a really good coach, but if a player's not going to really buy into what you're selling, it isn't going to change.
Oh, definitely, and especially when you're dealing with a veteran. I mean, Alex Gordon's, you know, he's 33 now. You know, you're not as adaptable to change at 33 as you are at 23. And I know, you know, back when Gordon, before he really became the player that he was in 2011, you know, he pretty much had to hit rock bottom. And then finally, in that offseason, was willing to rebuild his swing with Kevin Seitzer back then and, you know, became this player that earned this contract. And so the question is Swaim trying to make a change, and is Gordon listening? And Gordon has a little bit of a history of being kind of stubborn about making a change. And, you know, he's had a lot of success with this swing, this approach, and, you know, admitting that you're older and slower is a hard thing to do, especially when you're 33. It's easy for me now. I'm old. But when I was in my 30s, I still thought I was young, too. And in baseball terms, Alex is getting older. And so I don't know. You get into a murky area. Is it the player? Is it the coach? Or does it take a different voice in his head to say, look, you got to do this? Or does it take the fact that I'm going to suddenly be in a platoon with Jorge Bonifacio?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's what rock bottom is. But I think Gordon, if he's not close to rock bottom, he's got to be really close. And so if he hits that and says, I got to change, I'm playing my way out of the game, maybe that's where we need to get to, and then maybe he'll listen to someone.
I want to see if you agree with me. And Clark Fossler is with us for Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, talking Royals baseball here today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. And that is, before the season, we were talking about how this is a huge year for the Royals because of all the free agents. As we know, Kane, Hosmer, Escobar, Moustakas, also Vargas, a free agent at the end of this year. And it's all been highly documented. This is kind of the last year together to keep the band together, the core players of the team that won the World Series a couple years ago. And, of course, before the season, there was talk that the Royals were only interested in talking to Eric Hosmer about an extension, and how would that make the other guys feel when nobody's really talking to them, so forth and so on. And I said before the year, the Royals need to be either really, really good so that Dayton Moore doesn't have to make a tough decision. And it's like, you know what, we're in first place the All-Star break or trading deadline, and we got a chance to be really good, and we can make a run in the playoffs. And so he keeps it together and sacrifices the future a little bit to try to win now. And then the other side of the coin would be just be bad. Be really bad. And if you're really bad, then that's very simple. Then you have a fire sale and you can replenish the minor leagues. The problem is, if you're really bad and those guys you're trying to trade are really bad, which they were a few, as of probably 3-4 weeks ago, you're not going to get as much for those guys. Would you agree that the worst case scenario for the Royals might be what they're going towards right now? And that is, if they get around the 500 mark and they're, say, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 games out of first place in the division, and if you're at the 500 mark at the All-Star break, you're probably within 2, 3, 4 games of a wild card. Do you think it's a situation where Dayton Moore is going to be in a horrible, horrible, tough spot no matter what he chooses to do?
Oh, it's the absolute worst-case scenario. I mean, you're exactly right. Royals are, you know, get 6, 8, 10 games over 500 as we get into July, no-brainer. Let's go for it one more time. Or if they're, you know, 10, 15 under, perfect. Let's sell off and see what happens. But, I mean, like you said there, then what's the value of Lorenzo Cain or Eric Hosmer if this team is 15 under mm-hmm. at that point? I mean, that probably means they're not playing very well, because when Hosmer and Kane are hitting, along with Perez and Moustakas, as they are kind of now, the Royals show some signs of being a pretty good team. You know, you get to July 1st and you're, you know, one game under or one game over. I don't know what you do if you're Dayton Moore. I mean, that's a hard trigger to pull. And on the other hand, if they're around there, that probably means that maybe some of these guys are still playing pretty well and may have some value. Of course, the closer you get to the trading deadline, the less value you get for him, because you're getting 2 months of Eric Hosmer, which isn't worth as much as 4 months.
Right.
You know, now I did a little research, and of all the teams since 2010 that have won 87 games or more, there were, I believe, 75 of them that did that. Only 7 were under 500 on June 1st. So that may be a little benchmark. Can the Royals get to 500 by then or close?
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe you play it out a few more weeks. But if they can't make progress by then, I'd be tempted to, even if I am close to 500, say, you know, if there's 4 teams in front of me in the Central, I'm not going to make that leap. Let's try and get some value and try again next year.
The other thing that worries me is that the division the Royals are in, and normally I would say this is great. The Royals have had a horrible start, and they're only 4.5 games out of first, and they're in a mediocre division. But in this situation, I still believe the Indians are the best team in the division. I still think they're going to put it together, and they'll eventually pull away. The problem is, if Cleveland still sputters all the way to the trade deadline or the All-Star break, and then they kick it in high gear after the trade deadline, and the Royals stand pat. I mean, if the Royals were in the AL West right now with Houston, who's just off to a great start, they're 28-12, the Royals would be 11 games out of first already. And if that's the case, I think right now there'd be a lot of clamoring that the Royals, yo, absolutely, got to sell. You don't put all your eggs in a one-game wild card situation, because that's the only thing you're going to get, down 11 games already to the Houston Astros. But being in the division they are, Minnesota's 19-16, Cleveland's 20-18, Detroit's 18-19, the White Sox 17-20, and the Royals are 16-22 and only 4.5 out of first. Isn't that maybe somewhat fool's gold, that the Royals go, you know, we can win this division? Yeah, but if you win a mediocre division, are you really that good of a team?
Well, that's exactly right. Now, I love the playoffs, and so if the Royals think they can win the division, I think they ought to go for it, mm-hmm. because here's what I really believe. I don't know that the value they're going to get back by trading a Hosmer or a Kane at the trade deadline or sometime in July is going to be that great. You may get strike the lottery and get the next Ben Zobrist, because if you might remember, Zobrist was traded to Tampa and he was nobody.
Yep.
But you know, if you're close and you can get the division, and then I don't put it past this team to get to the postseason, and, you know, they've been there. They believe in the postseason. The mental aspect of the game can be overrated, but I think they would be a draw that nobody wants in the postseason. So if they could get to the division, I'd say you go for it, even if it is a bad division. And you're right. The concern is Cleveland clicks, and Cleveland's better than Kansas City when everything's percolating. And if they click, the Royals may be, the wild card may be out of reach anyway, and then you're trying to chase down Cleveland with a team, and then that's going to be gone next year. So, I mean, that's the risk. I mean, I think Dayton Moore has to consider what the Indians are doing and what they look like, as he also is reviewing what his team is and what they look like.
I agree with you there. I was looking ahead to next year in regards to the financial situation for the Royals, and it was a little bit alarming. And I don't know if you've done this yet or not. Next year, the Royals will have 60, unless they trade some of these guys, which I don't know how much trade value they have. The Royals have $67 million in guaranteed money owed to these six players next year. I'm not even talking the year after, okay? So next year, the Royals, $67 million to owe to six guys that are all well past 30. Alex Gordon, $20 million. Ian Kennedy, $16 million. Joaquin Soria, $8 million. Travis Wood, $6.5 million. Brandon Moss, $7.3 million. Jason Hamill, $9 million next year. Of those six guys, I would argue only one has been actually good for Dayton Moore. That was Ian Kennedy. And another that's at least bounced back so far this year, and Joaquin Soria. So two questions for you. One, does that alarm you that that much money the Royals have tied up in aging players that appear to be declining players for the most part? And two, what does that say about Dayton Moore as a general manager? Because everything he touched turned to gold in 14 and 15. But as soon as they, I'm telling you, as soon as they signed Gordon, it seemed like everything turned to you-know-what after that.
Well, I mean, Moore's got a spotty track record in that he has done some fantastic things, made some tremendous trades and signings. But also, he loves to hang that extra year on there, and sometimes that's what it takes to get these players in. You know, and maybe Kennedy opts out. That's an option, which would save the Royals money. That Travis Wood deal just looks like an abomination right now, but
yeah.
It's early.
Yeah.
Moss is, we kind of knew what he is. I mean, he's going to have a month where he just hits the cover off the ball. But it'll be one. It'll be 1 month. We sure haven't seen it yet. So I think Moore really focused with this core group. I'm going to win as much with this core group as I can. I'm going to go sign these extra parts, like a Kennedy, like a Wood, and get as many wins as I can before these guys leave for free agency and pick up the pieces afterwards. I think the assumption is, I think 4 years ago, he thought in 2018, we're not going to be very good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm playing from 14 to 17. We'll spend some money. We're going to have a whole bunch of young guys. I mean, the flip side of that, with all these guys leaving, the Royals get a bunch of draft picks, and they're going to be paying a lot of younger players who don't make any money, even if they're good, with this 60-some million of not very good players. And so I think he says, I'm going to piece it together. We'll work our way out of these big contracts, and, you know, 2 years after 2018, maybe we're back to where we were before if everything works out right.
Have another
it's a risk.
Yeah. Well, they have another $14 million tied up in Duffy next year, 7.5 with Perez. So in those eight players, they have $88 million on the books for next year, and they're not going to trade Duffy. They're not going to trade Perez. I don't know what you're going to get if you try to trade any of those other guys. Maybe Soria would get you something, but other than that, there's not much out there, which leads me to this. If you look at the Royals, and granted, they could turn things around and have a good year this year, but they're still, no matter what, if they have a good year and they make the playoffs and they make a run, they still have those free agents to deal with at the end of the year. So of those free agents that we mentioned, the five, which one would bring the most value right now if the Royals did here in a couple months need to trade and decide, hey, we're not in it, we got to move on?
Boy, I think it's a toss-up between Kane and Hosmer. I frankly think maybe Lorenzo Cain might bring back more value than Eric Hosmer, simply because of what he can give you in center field defensively. You know, that's a more premium position, and he plays it awfully well. And you know, he's hitting better than Hosmer right now, frankly. Yeah. Hosmer's got the always has that great potential, and he's playing pretty well, and he can do a lot of stuff when he's on. I think Kane is the better player and perceived to be the better player, especially for a 2 or 3 month rental. Now, if you're signing somebody long term, if you're a team that's going to trade for a guy and then try and sign him long term, then I think you give up a little more to have the inside track on Hosmer. I don't know that that's smart, but I think that's what the league believes. But I think Kane probably brings back the most return, unless someone really buys into Vargas. And, you know, people talk about the Royals should trade Vargas now. He's at the top of his value. I'm like, but the entire rest of the league also knows what Jason Vargas has done up to this point.
Right.
So they're not idiots out there. You never know who gets desperate, though, at the trade deadline. You know, someone really needs a starter to get to the playoffs and win the World Series. Then maybe they give up more for Vargas than they should, and they'll do it knowing they're giving up more, but they want to win. You know, it's kind of like trading for Johnny Cueto. You kind of knew what you were getting, but it was worth the gamble, and it paid off in the postseason.
One of the things I've been concerned about, and I said this when the Royals made the two trades, when they went and got Cueto and they got Zobrist, is that, hey, we're selling the farm to win a World Series championship, and it's a great move if you get the ring. It's a horrible it'll be a horrible move if you don't. And they did, and it worked. And we knew at the time, you and I think both knew this, is that there's going to be a time where you pay the piper for taking away that much starting pitching out of your pipeline. And you look at the Royals situation now, and it just happened recently with the hamstring injury to Ian Kennedy, that the Royals actually went all the way to Double A to call up Miguel Amonte. Then after one day, they sent him back down, and then Chris Young was your spot starter. And I'm going to say right now, Chris Young was terrific in 2015 for the Royals. Dayton Moore said he was their most valuable pitcher that year and did terrific in the playoffs for the team, especially game one of the World Series. But I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but if Chris Young is your top option to be a spot starter on your team, that tells me, one, you have a ton of injuries with your pitching staff, which they don't, or two, your minor league system has got major problems because you don't have anybody ready at the AAA level, and part of that reason is you traded away quite a few of those guys.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they took every quasi-ready pitching prospect they had to get Zobrist and Cueto. And, hey, I'll do that today.
Yep.
You know, I'll do that every time that chance is there. But that it did. It just took out the entire top level of pitching in the organization, unless you want to count Kyle Zimmer, who can't, you know, walk down the hall without getting hurt, apparently. And so the Royals do have a big gap, and, you know, Josh Stamont is not ready yet. He's a big arm with a lot of potential that I wouldn't be surprised if we see him eventually this year pitching in the starting rotation in Kansas City. But there's a gap there, and they gambled that maybe Chris Young could hang on one more year. He's obviously, I think, just about done if he's not done. He was great for him, but, you know, he's not a good option right now. We've been lucky in that the Royals have had big offensive days on the two starts he's had. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, we're having a whole different conversation right now about what they're going to do in the future. So, I mean, that's exactly what happened, and we knew it was going to happen. The hope was it would wait one more year, that Young could be serviceable, that Travis Wood could be serviceable. I mean, there's a guy that you could slot in if he was pitching well and get a few spot starts from him as well, I think. But, you know, he's not throwing the ball at all well. And then maybe you look at Mike Minor. Can you parlay what he's done in the bullpen into a spot start or two? That might be your next step. But, you know, we're finding veterans that we're trying to push in there, simply because there is no one in the minor league system that was ready for the last 2 years.
And, you know, the Royals have really been very, very lucky because last year they didn't have a lot of injuries to their starting rotation. And this year, so far, Kennedy with a hamstring, everybody else has stayed healthy, knock on wood. But if this team has two big-time injuries in their rotation, I mean, look at the Dodgers last year. Like, every single pitcher was on the DL. I think they went through 17 starting pitchers and still made the playoffs because they had some depth in the minors. But if that happened to the Royals, I mean, if Chris Young's your first option, who the heck's your second and third option if you have all kinds of injuries? And then the next thing, too, is the fact that they didn't have any depth in the minor league organization really, to me, forced Dayton Moore to overpay to get Ian Kennedy. And now you have a backloaded contract. And in some ways, I know many people say the reason you got Jason Hamill is because your Donna Ventura died in a car accident, which I think is true at that point in time. But if you had more in your minor league system, even with your Dono passing away, you could have maybe still been able to handle that within your organization, but with no depth in the system, now you got to go pay Jason Hamill a lot of money, and he has not performed, and you overextend to Kennedy.
Oh, exactly. I mean, he went and got Kennedy because he needed an arm.
Yep.
And it's basically paid out. If Ian Kennedy comes back any time in the next month and is healthy and throwing like he can throw,
yeah,
you know, that's a pretty good rotation.
Yeah.
Hamill was a panic signing, sure, mostly because of Ventura's tragedy, but I think they were thinking they needed an arm anyway, and they paid a lot to go get Hamill, and, you know, he's not been good for the Royals. And, I mean, he is who he is. He has never been great, but he's, you know, here's another guy. He's 34 years old. Is he on the backside of the hill and losing effectiveness just simply because of age? And I think that's something they have to consider there too. So, I mean, obviously they're paying the price, but they do have a trophy.
Yes.
They've got that flag, and that's worth everything they're paying right now.
Well, I've said back, you know, I say it today, I'll take 10 years of misery if that means we won a World Series championship. I'd rather be great a couple years than be good for 10 and then never win at all. So I'm with you there. What about the leadoff situation? I mean, the Royals don't have a leadoff hitter. We know that. Escobar hitting 186, he's your leadoff guy, but somehow, some way, when they put him back at the leadoff spot, they won 6 out of 7. I don't know. Ned can't explain it. I don't expect you to be able to explain it, but that's another issue for this team, isn't it? I mean, you don't have a leadoff guy. You just don't have consistency in this lineup.
No. Well, you just don't have enough guys hitting.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had a lot of guys hitting, if Alex Gordon's hitting, he's getting on base at 350, you leaving the leadoff. If you have enough other guys hitting, you could put Lorenzo Cain at leadoff. But you hate to take him out of the three spot, you know, where he can drive in some runs. Escobar at leadoff is, I don't know, that just tells you can't predict anything. Only thing I'll say about that is I know the rest of the team was excited to have him hit leadoff again, which, you know, we've all talked to a lot of baseball players. They're no smarter than the rest of us. They like things that are comfortable. They're comfortable with Escobar there. You know, I don't know why, because he's never posted a good on-base percentage, period. But if it makes the rest of them comfortable where they're hitting and it kind of perked the team up for a week or two, you know, ride the psychological wave, I guess. I don't know who gets leadoff for this team, you know, realistically, if you want to be, you know, analytical about it. You know, you keep waiting for Whit Merrifield to consistently hit, but he never can quite get to that level. You know, if I was managing this team, I'd put Kane in leadoff. He's my best hitter.
Yes.
And I want him to get the most at-bats.
Yes. And he's walking more, so he's getting on base more than he used to as well. And then you got speed at the top of the lineup. I totally agree with you on that. Before we let you go, Royals are 16-22, 4.5 out of first. They lose to the Yankees last night 7-1. The offense struggled again after doing pretty well during that stretch where they won 4 in a row. And as we mentioned, Jason Hamill was not good last night. He goes 6 innings and gave up 5 runs, 9 hits, and a couple of home runs. So my question to you is, how do you think this thing's going to play out? Do you think the Royals are going to be right there come the All-Star break and the trade deadline? And what do you think the Royals – what's your gut telling you on what the Royals' direction will be? As it's a huge decision, because to me they can really speed up the rebuilding process if they do end up having a fire sale. And if they don't, I think this franchise could be back to where it was for a while, and that's losing 100 games.
Well, I had a very optimistic preseason prediction for the Royals. I believe in this core group just because they are somehow greater than the sum of their parts. My prediction for the Royals in the short term is I think they will be at 500 by mid-June, maybe a little over 500 by the end of June. I think they're going to play well. I base that strictly on maybe my fervent prayer. But that's what I think will happen. I don't think they're going to have a fire sale. I'm afraid what will happen is they will basically be 5 games over 500 at the trade deadline and stay 5 games over 500 and not make the playoffs. But I think if they're there, you got to ride it out and see what happens. So we're in for a dark couple of years. But I think this team has one more run left in them as far as at least getting somewhere near contention, probably near enough that Dayton Moore will not pull the trigger on any big trades.
Oh, man. Tough for me to handle that one, but I think you might be right. Clark, let everybody know how they can follow your work.
You can follow us at BP Kansas City. Lots of great writers. They write a lot more than I do now. They're all younger and more excited. You can also follow us on Twitter. Same thing, BP Kansas City, and that'll get you out to all of us writers and our Twitter handles that are all funky and long. So lots of great content every day, and a lot of minor league stuff from Clint on our site. If you want to plan for the future, read Clint's updates every day. That'll tell you who's playing well.
Fantastic. Clark, as always, we appreciate the time talking Royals baseball. Next time we talk to you, hopefully the Royals are doing much better, and enjoy the rest of your summer, man.
Thanks a lot, Wade. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. That's Clark Fossler, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. Join us today on The Sports Ticket.